We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Fine. He takes his meds. He's good to go.
I don't think there's any medicine that's going to help Antonio Brown.
Red 22.
Hut, hut, hut. A very lively Clint Sterner's football at four. Dominique Foxworth, a former corner in the league, played with the Denver Broncos. He said he rated his top five wide receivers that are the toughest ones to defend. One, he had Tyreek Hill, obviously. Two, Odell Beckham. Three, Antonio Brown. He did that just for you, John. Four, Stephon Diggs. Five, Julio Jones. And he omitted DeAndre Hopkins, which I agree with. I actually agree with this list. I'll start with you, Wade. How do you feel about this list? And I'm sure you have some feelings about DeAndre Hopkins not being on this
list. I just look at it like this. Michael Thomas isn't on the list, and DeAndre Hopkins isn't on the list. But both of those guys are two of the most productive receivers in the league over the past few years. So Dominique Foxworth, although he is a veteran in this league and he does a good job of what he does, but that doesn't mean that these guys aren't the best in the league. And Michael Thomas and Hopkins are two of the best receivers in the league. So you not being on his list, it really doesn't mean anything. What Dominique Foxworth is telling me is that I'm not fast and I'm afraid of guys that are fast. I'm not that strong. I'm afraid of guys that are strong. And so these are why the guys are on my list.
Yeah. One of the reasons that Hopkins is so tough to defend, you can be all over him and he's still going to make the catch. He's not going to make it down the field and he's not a deep threat. But, man, if you want a first down on third and 10, he'll get 11. Third and 6, he'll get 7. And it doesn't matter how he's covered, and you can throw it low and he'll catch it. So, to me, that is tough to defend. Tough to defend is not necessarily a guy who goes deep most of the time.
Tyreek Hill, to me, is the toughest person to defend at the wide receiver position in football. That speed would keep you up at night. All right, man, we a great first segment here with John McClain. He'll be with us until 5 o'clock. Remember, 713-576-4610. You can text in Dear John. Any questions, sports or non-sports, you can text in hashtag Dear John. Say your city and name. More John McClain coming up next.
Ryan, let me stop you right there.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Stern and the show.
Remember, Dear John, hashtag Dear John, 713-572-4610. Text it in with a hashtag Dear John. Name your city and your name, and we'll get in your question to John McClain. That is at 445 each and every Friday. All right, John, I want you to come in into a discussion that we were having earlier. I made Wade Smith, I made him hot. I mean hot. And it extended. We almost had Richard Justice come in and have to discuss Richard Justice to come in and discuss this. He almost caught the middle of it. I said, I don't think that Jadeveon Clowney is a great player. I think he's a good player. And yes, I compared him and I said he feels very Sammy Watkins-esque to me. And I'm curious your thoughts on my comparison to Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, I think Clowney's much better player than Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins has never been the guy. Clowney's always been the second guy to J.J. Watt. In the few times that they played together, but a lot of times Clowney played while Watt was hurt. Thing about Jadeveon, he's disruptive. He's great against the run. He's a good pass rusher. He's got to be accounted for all the time, but he's never been a consistently great pass rusher, which is why he can't get $100 million. I still think he's going to end up at Tennessee, and I think it'll be so much fun watching him go up against Laremy Tunsil twice a season, if indeed that's what happens.
So John, this impetus of this came from a discussion that Ron had with Landry on their show earlier today on In the Loop, and Landry was saying that if Jadeveon Clowney was on this roster last year, if he was on the roster last year, that they could have gone to the Super Bowl. They would have went to the Super Bowl. They would have beat the Chiefs if Clowney was still on that team. Do you think that Landry has lost his mind, or does he have a point there?
Well, first of all, Landry lost his mind a long time ago. That's not up for debate. And if Clowney had been here last year, it means he would have had 3 sacks for the Texans instead of Seattle.
You don't believe that, John.
He got hurt last year, Wade. He got hurt.
It's the butterfly. It's the butterfly effect. 3 sacks.
Now, are you saying if he'd been a healthy last season, is that what we're saying?
We're saying if he never left.
They said, you know what?
Yeah, if he would have stayed on his roster the whole time, he never left, he never got traded away, and Jacob Martin was not here, but, you know, Jadeveon Clowney was here, does that make a difference, and they beat the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City that game, or now that's a home game? Like, is there any kind of validity to that statement by Landry Locker?
I think that if Clowney had been here last year, he'd gotten 8 or 9 sacks. He'd have been great against the run. He would have helped their run defense, but that's not going to help the secondary, keep the secondary from getting torpedoed and torched by Patrick Mahomes like he did in the playoffs. So absolutely not. I don't think they could have had Clowney, they could have had Elvin Bethea and Curly Culp, and it wouldn't have kept Patrick Mahomes from burning that secondary after that terrible start.
Oh, thank you. That is awesome.
I hear you, John and Wade. I think there was probably a new system that he had to learn, but he did go to what I would argue the second best defensive culture behind New England in the last decade in Seattle with what Pete Carroll, who is an excellent defensive coach, and what they have up there. He did go up to, I'd argue, a better coaching staff than he had here in Houston, and he produced 3 sacks. So I mean,
well, he was hurt. He was hurt most of the year.
He's always hurt, though.
No, he is not. He was early in his career. If you look at his games played, you know, Clowney didn't miss games. Now, he didn't like to practice. Everybody knew that. But Clowney is when he's healthy, a disruptive player who has to be accounted for by everybody on the offense, just like J.J. Watt. If he'd have been here last year and got 9 sacks, that'd mean they'd had 40 instead of 31, still 4 fewer than they had the year before.
Hey, John, when you look at the Texans, you mentioned it earlier in your discussion about what the difference it would have made against the Kansas City Chiefs this year. When you look at the moves or non-moves that they made in the defensive backfield, do you think that there's anything out there for them to do to get themselves ready defensively to match up with the teams like the Chiefs? Or are they just going to stand pat with what they got, and we got to expect that they're not going to be able to get over that hump?
At this point, if they are relying on guys that have been on the street since last season, they're in big trouble. Yeah. Now, they'll go after those guys if they have injuries or if COVID-19 keeps a guy quarantined for more than a game. But they've got their roster. They're going to have 16 guys on a practice squad. It's going to be a big blow to the ego of a lot of veteran players when they're said, well, we want to put you on our practice squad. And they're going to go, well, I'm not on the practice squad. Well, if you want to play for our team, you're going to have to, because we're going to need veterans to be able to come in and play when we have injuries and positive tests on COVID-19. But no, I think they have to get the quarterback better this year than last year. They can't rely heavily on the blitz to manufacture pressure like Romeo Crennel was forced to do last year. And I think their pass rush will be, we know it'll be better if Watt stays healthy for 16 games. Watt led the league in pressures last year till he hurt his, blew out that pec. And then when he came back, he had a big sack against Buffalo to ignite that comeback. But they need Jacob Martin and Charles Minihu, 2 guys, second year in the system. They need those guys to double what they did last year. And then they need Ross Blacklock. He doesn't have to be great. He just has to be, when he comes in and they tell him to get the quarterback, he's got to at least get some penetration, if nothing else, help free up other guys. Because if they don't, they're going to get shredded. Last year they had, I believe, 8 new defensive backs. This year they have 2.
John McClain, the general, with us in the 4 o'clock hour each and every Friday. Well, which one is it, John? Who is it do you think that they feel like they can depend on the most? You said Jacob Martin, Aminahu. Which one of those two guys do you feel like they believe is the one that's most likely to take a step forward?
Well, I think Aminahu going into his second season, Martin going into his third NFL season, his second here. Aminahu played 40% of the snaps. Martin played 20. Aminahu had 3 sacks. Martin had 3.5. Martin had a sack, and then he recovered a fumble in that Buffalo comeback. And that guy is one of the fastest guys on the team, and that includes defensive backs. And he is loaded with speed and talent. He's too light in the butt to ever be a full-time player, I believe. Where Aminahu is going to come in off the bench, and this is going to be in passing situations. Watt at left end next to Aminahu, and Blacklock next to Aminahu on the other side, and Martin rushing from the right side, and then Merciless shooting gaps up the middle. Sometime Merciless will move out there and rush with Martin. And so that's going to be their primary pass rush, barring injuries or anything from COVID-19. And they need all those guys to be better than last year. Watt, they just need him to be healthy. You're talking about Indianapolis earlier and be picked 7th. People are banking on Phillip Rivers at his age playing like he did in 2018, not 2019. Well, if you're banking on Phillip Rivers, why not bank on Brandon Cooks, David Johnson, and J.J. Watt to play the way they did in 2018? And if you do it, they're all going to make this team better.
John, taking it to the other side of the ball, the ESPN put out an article where they discussed the rankings for each position groups around the NFL, and they ranked the Houston Texans offensive line as number 22 when they compared them against the other teams in the league. Has ESPN lost their damn mind, or do they have any kind of validity in that ranking for the Houston Texans offensive line?
I think they'll look really bad, and here's why: because I just wrote about the offensive line for Sunday. And I looked up a lot of stuff on Pro Football Focus last year, had them 20th. They rate them 19th this year. They had the Texans with the 6th best pass blocking grade, 79.1, 6th in the NFL. Where they said the Texans really struggled was run blocking. And I think people here would take that. All 5 of their starters had a pass blocking grade of 70%. Now, here's some differences last season to the year before, when they went 11-5. And of course, some of these are Watson's fault. The line can't be blamed for all the improvement or all the blame. Sacks last year, 44. My second number is going to be 2018. Sacks 44-62. Hurries 47-77. Pressures 130-198. Pressure percentage 22.3-31.7. Hits 39-59. Watson scrambles 44-58. The sack percentage last year, 8.2-10.9. Now, that's with the offensive line playing together for the first time, missing Titus Howard for the second half of the season. Now, these starters are back. They're in their second season together. I'll be stunned if they don't finish in the top half of the NFL. And I think people that pick them low like that have not paid close attention. They look at the sacks and go, my God, Watson was sacked 44 times. But 2 years ago, he was sacked 62. So I expect him, because of the nature of the way he plays, still gets sacked somewhere around 30, 35 times. And the Lions' performance will be recognized at a whole lot better.
Yeah, that's right, John. They're idiots. all right, we'll continue here. John McClain with us through the 4 o'clock hour. Remember, text in your Dear Johns. We're already getting some good ones. Hashtag Dear John. Any question you want to ask, sports-related or non-sports-related, John will answer that. 445, text it in 713-572-4610. More John McClain coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Stoerner and the Show.
That's right, baby. Clint Sterner is out today. Ron, the show, Hugh Glenn, Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, is with us. And the general Hall of Famer, John McClain. Remember, here in about 10 minutes or so, Dear John, hashtag Dear John, 713-572-4610. You can text it in. Any question you want to hear the general answer, he will answer that. Go ahead, hashtag Dear John. Say your city and name, and we will get your question up. It's real interesting. We were talking about the offensive line, John. Then it feels like it reminds me of like Alex Smith. Alex Smith, they would always say, man, he is not a downfield thrower. Forever, not a downfield thrower. Even though his last year in Kansas City, he led the league in passes over 40 yards. But just for so long, people were just convinced Alex Smith doesn't throw the ball down the field. Doesn't it feel like that's the thing with the Houston Texans offensive line? I still believe that most people think that's the same offensive line that forced Deshaun Watson to have to catch a bus to Jacksonville rather than flying. I feel like that's where many of it goes to when people think about the offensive line.
I agree 100%.
What?
This time last year, think about this. Tunsil was in Miami. They didn't know where to play Titus Howard, right or left or guard. Max Sharping, who played right tackle in college, was tried at tackle, guard, and center. So they were still shuffling those around, trying to mix and match. And then once they settled on everybody, you know, the offensive line made a lot of improvement. They ran the ball well enough, and they threw the ball tremendously. Last year, Bill O'Brien called fewer run plays than any time since he'd been the coach because he's got Deshaun Watson, and he knows we need to put the emphasis on him. And I'm sure Tim Kelly calling plays for the first time will do the same thing. Here's an interesting stat that I just blew me away. In the Texans' history, Wade, I'm sorry to throw this out there since you're part of this. We're part of this.
Okay.
The Texans have never gone three games in a row without giving up a sack. And when they've gone two in a row, they're 9-1 under O'Brien. And when they last year, they were 3-0 when they gave up two or fewer. But I was stunned that they'd never gone three in a row. And maybe this will be the first offensive line they've had that can put three in a row. I know that's hard, but still, I was stunned that they've been in business that long and have never had that happen even one time.
Yes, John, speaking of stats and keeping on the offensive side of the ball, earlier in the show, Show and I were discussing what I felt like the amount of touches the running backs and specifically Duke Johnson should be getting this upcoming season. I told Show that I felt like Duke Johnson needs to get 15 touches a game, and I think David Johnson should get 20 touches. Between the two guys, I think they should get 35 touches a game. And if the Texans run an offense to where they can get those two running backs 35 touches a game, that means they're playing winning football, and they're taking that next step and competing with the big boys in the AFC. How off or right do you see me in that scenario?
The way they want to use those two guys on the field together when they have the option of putting both of them in the passing game, one of them in the passing game, one runs or one blocks. Tim Kelly is incredibly fortunate to have that because it's the first time in team history they've had two guys that can catch like that. David Johnson's average per catch is phenomenal. And the fact is, you know, they're not safety valves. Last year, Duke lined up wide. He lined up in a slot. He went in motion. Now they've got two. Last year, Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson both had 40-something percent of the snaps, and I think it'll be evenly split this year, too. Duke had a great yak, and he also only dropped one pass last year. He had 410 yards rushing, 410 yards receiving, and that's good for a guy that came off the bench. So if you do give them that many touches the game, you're going to have a lot of unhappy wide receivers and tight ends.
Oh, that's interesting. John McClain here with us. Remember, Dear John coming up at 4:45. Like, when you talk about the backs, we've heard them speak, and you've been there every step of the way in these Zoom calls. From Deshaun Watson, he spoke on Saturday talking about, I've never had a pair of backs like this. Tim Kelly spoke about the backs. Bill O'Brien spoke about the backs. Sometimes when you hear coaches and players talk about certain positions, you don't know if they're serious about. It feels like the Texans are going to make a concerted effort to really make this a big part of their team. And it almost feels like going after David Johnson was a big priority in doing this.
Well, 2 years ago, I've pointed this out. I asked Landry this week, the guy, of course, who've lost his mind,
long time,
if he would take what David Johnson had 2 years ago, which was almost 1,400 yards rushing, receiving, and 10 touchdowns, knowing he was going to split with Duke Johnson. And he said, no. And I said, well, why? And he said, because of his salary. And I said, well, what does money have to do with it? The fact is, if David Johnson's healthy, the guy's a good player. Last year he got benched. He missed 3 games with injuries. He was hurt in 2 others. But 2 years ago he played 16 games behind a terrible offensive line. And here he's coming in behind a good line with a great quarterback. One of the advantages for the running game, and I'm not just talking about them as receivers, they're going to throw the ball down the field. Pro Football Focus had Watson as number 2 in the league down the field. And if that's the case, he did it without Will Fuller for 5 games. And so now with Fuller, Cooks, and Kenny Stills, all those guys ran in the low 4.3s at their combine. Randall Cobb was only 4.46. They're going to have more time, and they're going to throw the ball down the field. And when the DBs and they start changing their coverage to worry about those deep balls, that's going to help the running game even more.
John McClain with this. Real quick, John, before we get to Dear John coming up here at 2:45, you can text in anything you want to pose to him. We saw that there were 65 players that opted out in the NFL this year due to COVID, and only one, Eddie Vanderduce of the Texans. I'm wondering to you, I feel like it's not a coincidence that the Texans has been, I don't know, in terms of resources, put money and put things forth more than any other franchise in the National Football League. I don't see that as a coincidence to see that their numbers of guys opting out is lower than anybody else. Do you think that has something to do with maybe players feeling much more comfortable with everything that the Texans have put into trying to keep everybody safe here with the Texans?
I don't know what everybody else has done, Ron, or how much they've spent. I know teams are spending, I think it's $2.34 million each to have BioReference come out there and do those tests all season. And they spent a fortune inside the building and outside the building, meaning across the street over at Houston Methodist Training Center, the bubble, which they use for meetings, and then they'll practice and have walkthroughs in there. And then next Thursday, they'll put on pads, and we'll see them inside the bubble and outside on the field. And the players do feel safe. I think they're a veteran team. A lot of the guys that have opted out or backup-type players, or in the Patriots' case, they had the most by far. But I think a lot of veterans. Whitney Merciless, when we talked to him, he has family not living with him, his wife and kids, but family who are high risk. So he's just not going to see them this year. And a lot of people that have high-risk family members who've opted out, that would have been an easy path to take for the football season unless they're living with you. Then that's a totally different story. But the Texans have been very fortunate for on 2 things: to only have one opt-out, Eddie Vanderduce, who I don't think would have made the team. And so far, they haven't had any players test positive for COVID-19, and therefore, they haven't had to put anybody on the COVID-19 list who has been around somebody who is tested positive. And that means they got everybody available over there for practice, except now Kenny Stills, who's on non-football illness list till he gets well.
John, the NBA bubble has been exceptionally well run, and they haven't had any positive tests over the past few weeks. Do you think that the Houston Texans and other organizations are keeping a close eye and trying to possibly mirror some of the things that they've done there in the NBA bubble, because it's worked beautifully?
The Texans and other teams, and some are going to be better than others, just like some organizations are better than others. They're watching baseball. They're watching basketball, hockey, all the sports. They're watching soccer in Europe to see these teams come back. They're not having issues. Why? What are they doing? And I think that's smart. That requires a lot of time and effort at a time when you're trying to have training camp and prepare to win. And the thing Wade, let me ask you this. Say you're playing right now, mm-hmm. and Bill O'Brien got up in front of the team in the auditorium, and he said, okay, he said, here are the rules. If you break these rules and you go clubbing or you go to strip clubs or you go anywhere where people are indoors more than 10 people, and you're going to lose money when you're quarantined. You're not the games you miss. You're not going to get paid. You could be suspended. And I'm going to put you up here in front of the whole team. And you're going to have to explain to J.J. Watt and Wade Smith and Deshaun Watson and Nick Martin and Darren Fells and Laremy Tunsil why you were so selfish that you didn't care enough about your teammates to not break the rule. What kind of deterrent would that be?
I think it would be a significant one. There's a such thing as a good peer pressure, and the idea of being holding yourself and you being held accountable to yourself and your teammates. That's something that all of these franchises are banking on, because you don't want to be the guy that causes the issue. You don't want to be the one to basically sink the ship. And so if you're that type of person that is that selfish, and you're ostracized because of it, or you're put up in front of the stage to say, hey, this is the type of decision this person made, and now this is how he put us at risk, I think that would be a strong deterrent. But the thing that you worry about is people make mistakes because they don't think. In other words, there's so much stuff that goes on with this coronavirus that in a normal situation you would do and not think anything of it. And so guys having to be vigilant and extra careful all the time, that's the part that you would want people to do, but I don't know if you can necessarily expect them to do it, because human nature does not tell you to do a lot of the rules that are in place right now. That's why I would love it if all of these teams had an actual bubble and it puts you in a situation where there's someone constantly watching you and helping you to remember, because there can be natural things that you're doing, not terrible things like going to the strip club to get wings on a Tuesday because you want to get a deal. None of that type of stuff, but just regular stuff that can cause you to put yourself at risk. And so that's why I hope that these NFL teams are looking at the NBA bubble and trying to incorporate as much as what they're doing so that they can keep themselves and keep themselves viable to go out and try to win a Super Bowl.
Wade, do you think they should put a sign up on the door as players leave the stadium saying, if you got to have wings, stay out of the strip clubs?
At least don't go inside. Just do the drive-thru. They got a drive-thru strip club in Houston right now anyway. Fellas, so you can get the wings and see the things at the same time in the drive-thru.
He wanted more than wings.
Okay. How is that club, Ron?
Hey, man, you going to put me out there like that, man? I'm married now.
Wade knows.
I used to know. I ain't been in a long time, and I'm definitely not going in the middle of a pandemic.
No, come on. I mean,
there's certain things that are important in life, and seeing strippers is not the thing right now.
I can't get past the mask. All right, here it is, each and every Friday, Dear John.
Let's kick off the weekend by asking the most respected Houston sports writer of all time anything you want. Submit your questions to the text line 713-572-4610. Include hashtag Dear John along with name and city. And for today's Dear John, let's open up the mailbag.
All right, John. So first up, Dear John. Do you believe Will Fuller will be a true number one receiver, or will it be more like a 1A and 1B situation with Fuller and Cooks? And that's from McClure in Houston.
McClure, if Will Fuller is healthy and Brandon Cooks is healthy, Cooks has been a great receiver his entire career, except for last season when he caught a career-low 42 passes. But he has been much more productive. Fuller has played in Hop's shadow. He's been hurt a lot. It's the last year of his contract. If they averaged last year more than 5 points a game,
when he played than what they did when he didn't. So I would say if he can stay healthy, he'll be a big-time player, but he's not going to be better than Brandon Cook.
Gotcha, John. Okay, Dina and Katie wants to know, Dear John, how many times do you roll your eyes at show on a Friday?
What the hell?
Shout out to Dina, dog. Dina and Katie, that's my new friend. That's pretty damn funny.
Everybody just laughing so hard.
That was funny.
Dina, I'm trying to remember. Let's see. One, two.
No, he's counting out loud.
Three.
Sammy Watkins, that's four.
More than one hand. More than one hand.
All right.
Oh, John, you love me.
Stop. I do love you.
Phil in Houston says, Dear John, do you expect a significant jump in offensive number of plays per game this year with the Texans?
I don't expect them to have a significant number of plays, Bill, because I think they're going to be a quick striking offense, not as big play, as many big plays as Kansas City, of course. But I think with those receivers they have and that Watson will have more time to throw, I see them scoring a lot of touchdowns with bigger plays down the field. So, therefore, they won't have the long, methodical drives.
John, does that scare you with the defense that they have in place?
Yeah, but, you know, the name of game, scoring points. Just outscore them. That's what the Chiefs do. Two times last year, the Texans scored 31 at Arrowhead Stadium. That's pretty good. You score 31 at Arrowhead, most of the time you're going to win, and they split.
They only scored 7 in the second half. But this offense with the speed they have, to me, should be a big play offense and take advantage of what you got.
All right.
I agree.
Xavier and Katie says, Dear John, with the Texans having two new coordinators, do you think it will hurt them early on in the season? Take them time to adjust.
It's a great question, and because they did not have preseason, they didn't have joint practices or even practices yet. But the fact that Tim Kelly and Anthony Weaver have been with the team for so long, it's not like they're new. I think new coordinators who are coming to the NFL's coordinators for the first time, like in Carolina, those are the guys that are going to have to adjust because they don't have as much talent. And they also have Bill O'Brien on offense and Romeo Crennel on defense to rely on. So I look for them to hit the ground running because they have Watson and a lot of experienced players around.
Awesome. Okay, Pedro in Houston wants to know, Dear John, what is your favorite beer to sip on?
Pedro, I usually like Corona with a lime.
Knew I liked you.
Clint would be so disappointed, General.
I mean, we drink Coors, but I mean, I'm with him. I like a good look.
Gotta look for those mountains to turn blue.
Now, John, is this Corona only in a bottle, or is it? Can it be in the can?
No, Wade. It's got to be in the bottle. So you put your little lime up there. I love those Corona commercials where they got the beer between them, the man and the woman, and that's the way to drink Corona.
You know, I prefer.
I prefer
an angry an angry orchard.
This man loves angry orchard.
I love a good angry orchard right now, man.
All right, I think we got time for one more, beers. John. If the Texans were to get off to a rough start this year, do you believe that Bill would make a midseason move, or would he just ride it out for the remainder of the season?
Well, first of all, I think they're going to start 1-3. I think they're going to lose the first two to Kansas City and Baltimore, and they're going to lose to Pittsburgh, beat Minnesota, and then their first 7 games are the toughest in the NFL. And I think over the last 9, the 2 teams that made the playoffs last year that they play are New England and Tennessee, and they play them both here. So I think they're going to get off to a bad start. Everybody will scream for O'Brien to be fired, and then they'll recover over the second half.
John McClain, always a great time with you during the 4 o'clock hour. Stay safe this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ron, thank you very much. Wade, always great to be on with you. Have a great weekend, guys, and I hope you stay safe, too. Thank you very much.
All right, that's John McClain, the Hall of Famer, each and every Friday in the 4 o'clock hour. Coming up next, these stories that you need to know going into the weekend. 5 o'clock fire coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.
If you're calling 50 Cent, you got no clue what's going on.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.